episode 20, the big 2-0, which is recording on the 17th of March 2019 for release on the 19th of March 2019. We have very much passed the Ides of March already. It's kind of scary, frankly, how quickly this year is going, but whatever. Old man topic aside, my name is Elliot Page, and joining me as always is my lovely co-host, Mr. Andy Hanley. How are you doing, Andy?
Just wishing I was 20 now you mention it, but apart from that, I'm doing fine.
God, no, maybe not 20, maybe 24. 24 is okay, but 20, man, I was a moron then. Holy cow.
I mean, I'm a moron now, so, you know, some things never change.
that's a good application of some things never change. Oh, God. Okay, so this is your fortnightly look at manga. We will focus on joint discussion. We announce our show's series ahead of time, so you too can also join in if you so fancy. We've had some pretty good replies to our most recent episode 19, and I believe that's coming up again in Returning Champions, also known as the Elliot Should Hurry Up and Read This section. But first and foremost, if you like manga, this podcast in particular, and you'd like to throw money at us, you're more than welcome to. We have a Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/screentoneclub, or one word, and there you can throw money at us to get bonus episodes. And on that tactic, we are here to announce the bonus episode topic for March, which did not go the way I was expecting due to a sudden last-minute spike in votes. We will be looking at the first omnibus volume of Cardcaptor Sakura, released by Dark Horse. You can get it physically in a rather weighty tome. But yeah, the first volume of Cardcaptor Sakura. So yeah, we'll be getting that on. As a quick note, it'll be the original Cardcaptor Sakura, not Clear Card, the pseudo-sequel series thing I don't know enough about, but it exists. So we'll be reading that. Honestly surprised we're not reading another light novel. Don't get any ideas, people.
yeah, I mean, I'm only guessing an omnibus edition of something is its own kind of effort, but I'm interested in that. Like, I've never really delved into Cardcaptor Sakura, so that is a good opportunity for me to do so, I guess.
Yeah, from what I remember, my read of it a few years ago, it's really fascinating how it's a Magical Girl series, evidently, and as is probably known, but it's really weird where it blazes its own trail in some ways, and it's kind of interesting in some regards the things it leaves on the cutting room leave stuff on the cutting room floor and take other stuff away from it, and it's interesting which, anyway, we'll see. I'm just beating up. So if you want to hear more about my slightly more coherent thoughts on Cardcaptor Sakura, tune in to the bonus episode. Also, on the subject of bonuses, we have our shout-out section where we shout out people who give us a slightly silly amount of money to announce them on this podcast. So, again, returning once more is Rob Jessup. Thank you ever so much for your kind support. Moving on is our next part of the podcast, which is the Returning Champions section. Again, I should have already read this, but Andy has very kindly gone ahead and stolen the march on me. So do you want to take it away, Andy? Because I think you might have some stuff to say.
Yeah, so on the last episode, we talked about what was actually Elliot's pick of the first volume of After Hours. And I think it's fair to say we both had a lot of positive and glowing things to say about it. And yep. I made it very publicly known that I'd been sitting on my hands rather impatiently to read the remaining two volumes of it because it's only three volumes long. And so pretty much as soon as we were done with recording, I grabbed my tablet and read volumes 2 and 3 of After Hours. And much like my glowing praise of the first volume, the second and third volumes of After Hours are also utterly tremendous. Like, it's come the end of it, it is basically certainly one of the best manga I've ever read, and possibly up there as one of the best things I have read in general. It is really excellent, and for the most part you can probably just, you know, go back if you didn't listen to it at the time and listen to episode 19 and our discussion of volume 1, because everything that we talk about in there is absolutely present and correct, like, throughout the remaining volumes. Like, it's still a fantastic kind of look, a fantastic window into a relationship that issues all of the kind of standard tropes of kind of romance stories in general. Like, I mean, you know, manga and anime has its own kind of set of tropes and the way these things go. But even in terms of, like, broader narratives of kind of, you know, love stories and kind of stories around which a relationship is focused, like, they all tend to take the same sort of shortcuts and have the same kind of shorthand that, you know, it does the job and, you know, it pulls the heartstrings, et cetera, et cetera. But there's a real kind of subtlety and nuance to After Hours that I think actually volumes 2 and 3 kind of really accentuate even more. Like I was kind of thinking about it at the end of it all, because usually like when you're watching or reading anything, you tend to have a pretty kind of pure and simple emotional response to it. Like if it's an action film, like it gets the adrenaline pumping, it's something that will make you laugh, it's something that will make you cry. But like I was left, particularly after the second volume, with a really kind of complicated emotional feeling, which is kind of, you know, very akin to, you know, a real life relationship. Like it's not just a case of like, oh, this was great and this was terrible. Like there are often kind of almost conflicted feelings about things. And I think this manga does a really good job of kind of putting that across. Like it's very subtle. Like it rarely kind of goes for its sort of, it really goes for the dramatic throat, if you like, of just like, hey, here's going to be a big blowout argument or something like that. Like we talked about volume one having kind of a something of an elephant in the room in terms of the relationship between Kay and Emmy, the two main characters. And that there's kind of almost an assumption that, oh, this is just going to get resolved by some big row or something. But actually, it doesn't do that. Like it goes for a way more subtle kind of shifting of that relationship and kind of moving of the goalposts in quite a subtle way that affects both characters, where they kind of come to their own realizations about kind of what's happened and how they've kind of stumbled into the scenario that they're now in. And the surprising thing, I guess, is that basically that gets resolved in volume 2. So volume 3, I was like, well, what are we going to do now? Like there is a thing that is set up that is going to be like, okay, this is what we're doing in volume 3, but I kind of like sat there thinking, this is going to be pleasant, but I don't really see, are you going to wring much out of this? Because it feels like it's just going to be a really long extended epilogue. But actually, volume 3 has its own kind of emotional denouement, which is, there was a moment where I was a little bit worried that it was kind of jumping off the deep end and doing stuff that was out of character for the main, for Kay in particular. But then it kind of, once it explains it and fills in the blanks, it makes perfect sense, and it becomes this incredibly kind of powerful ending to the series that also kind of like delves into the other thing that is really good about this series, in that I just absolutely love the art style. Again, we talked a lot about that in our previous podcast, but kind of the some of the final scenes and sort of the final chapter or two, which is kind of, you know, the emotional resolution of a lot of what's gone on previously, like there's a real kind of cinematic feel to it. Like the way like shots are kind of composed, and you know, where kind of cameras are placed in inverted commas, like there's a real kind of big kind of grandiose theatrical presentation to it that really kind of serves it well. Like that where this kind of like final climax takes place, and you know, the things that happen there, it really suits this kind of the way that it's laid out and the way that it's all depicted. And at the end of the day, it is just this kind of really perfect kind of synergy of images and dialogue and kind of character building, and using those characters that you've built across several volumes so much. And like the end of it, just again, it was just like, I can't just sit and say, oh, the ending made me cry or the ending made me happy, because the ending just made me feel so many things. And it was kind of, even just thinking about it a week later, you just have this kind of complex emotional sort of equation, if you like, kind of welling up in you, because it's just so, so real. And it is so kind of, there's so much you can take out of it. And that for me is something that just really, I feel like it's going to stick with me for a long time. So yeah, like my closing thoughts is, it's a really fantastic series. Like everybody should read it, particularly if you have any kind of interest in sort of romance-led stories.
Yeah, especially if you want something that's a little different to My Returning Champion in a second. But that's fascinating, because I remember when, I think it was last week, you mentioned that you were like reading volume 2 like as having a lie-in, and you said like, I mean, forgive me if I'm taking your words out of context and you can correct me, but the way you phrased it was like, no, it's not that I was sad, it's just that I wanted to wallow in this feeling and not like jettison it and get up and do the hoovering, which is a bit of a climb down. And that kind of struck me of like, oh wow, like it's clearly powerful if it's doing that. And I'm, you know, I've entered into the stupid Elliot Page region of being slightly scared of reading the rest of it. Although, you know, everything you say sounds great. And, you know, you mentioned about where it places the camera. And I think I, listening back to it, editing the previous podcast, I spent a good 3 minutes trying to explain that as an idea in the manga. So it's nice to hear it continues. So, yeah, I'm really glad that this continued. And also, like, from a rather sort of high up looking down view, I feel glad that it's three volumes and it accomplished so much in that amount of pages, but also it knew what it needed to do and did it. And the fact that it's three volumes just makes me feel even better, because the amount of times I've read a manga and it's like, this should have ended. Like, what's going on?
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's one of those weird things where, like, there's part of me that sits there and thinks like, man, I wish there was more of this because it is so incredibly good. But then there's also the understanding that part of what makes it good is that it is very compact and it kind of makes use of every page and every chapter, and you know, it does everything that it needs to. Like, if there were ever to be more of this series, it would have to be a kind of like, and especially actually given how this series ends, like you could definitely do a kind of like 5 years down the line, 5 years in the future, like revisiting what's happened to these characters, like where they're at in their lives, that would probably actually be genuinely interesting. But yeah, it is kind of perfect as it is. So, you know, perhaps it's best to be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, sometimes you don't need, I mean, I'm a fan of that stupid thing they have in movies or any media where it's like, so-and-so went on to do this, like the whole epilogue thing. But sometimes you don't need it. And sometimes, you know, you want to see the good part, the story-worthy part of these characters and not have them just like dragged around. I mean, you know, it's one of the things that makes soap operas really weird and crazy to me is, well, not just in general, is that if you try and sit down and bullet point out all the stuff that's happened to these characters, you go, Jesus Christ, like, this is gnarly. whereas sometimes you just want that tight little event, set of events. But yeah, I've got both volumes 2 and 3 purchased and downloaded on my tablet. I fully intend to read them very soon, probably tomorrow even, because I've finished my previous reading. So yeah, I mean, we've already infected some of our listeners with the bug of this series, including, I think, one person who bought all 3 physical volumes in one shot and said, it may be good, damn it. And it's like, well, I stand by our opinions in the previous episode, so do not fret.
yeah, I believe that the series, like, they found it as a like 3-for-2 deal at a Forbidden Planet or whatever.
Oh, even better.
So if you're on the physical train, and honestly, like, I love the artwork and the character design so much. Like, this is a series I'd almost be tempted to like do the opposite of the usual and just double dip on as a physical version just to have it. So like that's almost a dangerous temptation for me.
It's one of those like sort of slightly larger size editions, isn't it? It's like slightly bigger. It's not just crunchy.
Yeah, which just makes it all the more tempting of like, I could just luxuriate in it again. Because this is also like the other thing is this. So series I can see myself reading again. Like it does enough for me kind of emotionally, and I'm invested enough in the characters that I could see myself, like, you know, in a year or so just being like, you know what, I just want to live through that again. I'm just gonna take the whole thing in again on a lazy day sometime.
That's a good one, especially if you go, because it's one of these things, sometimes you have these emotionally resonant sort of pieces of media that after you're done, you're like, I'm not touching that ever again. Like, I'm done. But like, there, I also have those sort of things where it's like, no, this is something I'm going to revisit like on the regular when I need it to, when I need to. So that's cool. Yeah, I need to hurry up and read it. But yeah, I'm really good. Also, the one thing that made me laugh was when someone took that shot of the 3 books together. Volume 3, beefy, bigger than the previous 2. It was kind of one of these things like, oh, okay, the ending. Here's the ending then.
yeah. There's plenty going on in that final volume.
Yeesh. Okay, cool. I need to. Oh, damn it. But yeah, again, it's one of these things that I'm glad that I impulse bought it, and then glad that I recommended it for this podcast, or I'm pretty sure it would still be unread on my tablet. So there you are.
The system works.
Yeah, it does. Oh, thank goodness for this podcast. So moving on, I have a quick volume 2 of something we previously reviewed. I forget which episode number it was. I'll probably put a note in the show notes. But I picked up volume 2 of Boarding School Juliet. To catch you up, this is the Romeo and Juliet style high schoolers. They're on like a weird high school that is used to try and diffuse tensions between these two nations, the black dogs and the white cats. And it kind of goes through the fact that the two main sort of like, two of the main figureheads are in love with each other, confess their feelings, and are now going out and having to have a surreptitious relationship. And volume 2 kind of jumps in and right off the bat, like, investigates something that I was keen for it to get to, which is basically, hey, what about this girl who likes the main male character and is going to have to be let down at some point? And it does that. And it's really weird, but I feel it handles it well, but it also handles it in very much a case of, you know, the characters are interrupted in trying to resolve themselves, and now this thing is just a hanging sort of, like, rope hanging there. But I must admit, like, the series, like, from the initial sort of amusement, is now just kind of eh. Like, it's very much a case of, like, okay, we need to keep this on the down low, need to prevent misunderstandings, blah, blah, blah. There's, you know, machinations, and there's politicking going on, and there's clearly some kind of secret student council, da, da, da. And, you know, it's all there, but I kind of don't care. Like, I would kind of prefer it to be lower stakes rather than, like, the secret student council. Look at these three characters we've enrobed in shadow that you'll be slowly introduced to. And it's like, I don't care. I just want cute hijinks. And this is... So, yeah, it kind of just carries on. The end of the second volume, it's like trying to rear you up into some kind of amazing... into the, like, the sports day storyline. And I was kind of just sat there shrugging. So, whoops. Still looks nice, though. The characters have settled down, and even some of the more evil or bullyish characters have stopped being such jerks because the author figured out that people like them, so maybe don't make them massive jerks. But yeah, it's kind of very fluffy and kind of nothing. Like, it's up to 7 volumes now, but I kind of don't think I'm going to, like, bite this again, because even this was very bland to kind of jump into. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does seem like one of those series, like, coming off the back of After Hours, that would be like, this would be good as a, like, 3-4 volume thing, maybe. If you knew there was a kind of decent end in sight, you could probably, like, stick it out, see what happens in the end, see if more of the characters you like get some more kind of airtime, as it were. But yeah, it's maybe, yes. 7 volumes sounds like a lot when it's kind of running out of steam come volume 2.
Well, it's more the fact that it's got plenty of ideas that it can use, but I don't care. Like, I don't care about the sports day. I don't care about what will probably end up being the, like, I don't know. I think I'm just at, like, capacity on high school storylines, which I feel like you could say for most people in anime, or I don't know, most people I know, but. Like, also, this is a bit of a, this is not a direct comparison, but also, like, I'm already reading We Never Learn, and I really prefer that for my idiot high school hijinks romance nonsense. So
yeah.
I'm it sounds weird, but, like, having that available weekly on Shonen Jump kind of satiates me and all my sort of idiot romance shenanigans.
Yeah, I mean I think that's a real issue for kind of this kind of genre in particular, is that you're never spoiled for choice in terms of other series that you could be reading. It's much like the whole kind of isekai thing of just, like, there are a whole bunch of, like, yeah, they're okay kind of isekai stories, but there are so many of them to choose from. Like, why would you choose a mediocre one when there are much better examples kind of either currently running, or, you know, just go back in the annals of time a few years and you'll find some real quality ones. And the whole kind of high school romantic comedy, kind of harem comedy hijinks saying, like, you know, there are no shortage of opportunities there to find some really good content.
Yeah, there's enough best girl arguments you can get into, don't worry. There'll always be another fight. Okay. But yeah, that was that. It, you know, it was fine. I got it on sale or whatever. Moving on. So now we're moving on to the actual picks for this episode. So first, do you mind if I take my one, Andy? I don't think it'll take long.
Yeah, let's go with yours.
So my one is Shotaro Kominami takes on the world, volume 1. The "Ugh" is not in the actual title. I was annoyed at my own pronunciation. It's by Dan Ishikawa. It's on Yen Press, published by Yen Press even. It's complete at 3 volumes, I believe, in physical versions. It's like a 1-volume omnibus, so it's just one honking great big tome. And it stars the titular Shotaro Kominami, who is a shut-in, who is like 20, I think 23, 24, and is a shut-in. He lives in a small flat that costs very little money because it's basically falling apart on the outskirts of Tokyo. His mum sends him a care package full of rice, along with a very short, curt letter saying, "I'm not sending you any more money. Here's the address of the job center." You know, the Japanese version of the job center. And so he realizes that he can't just sort of shut up and read literature all day. He's going to have to get out there and get a job. And what follows is the character trying to get a job, failing, and also reflecting on the fact he has tried to get a job before, but has basically flunked out due to being intensely socially anxious and shy. And the show even the series even has a particular word for it, which it pushes constantly, called schlocken, which is like shy chicken lonesome, which is basically like a potted version of them wanting to make connections but can't, but also being very shy and also just wanting to run away from stuff. And just as a quick oversight, like, as someone who has previously suffered from like social anxiety, like, it's a pretty good approximation of the weird stuff you do when you are afflicted by that, and the ways you act out and like try and get around it but kind of fail because you're a bundle of anxiety, frankly. But he gets found by this very pretty lady who then says, hey, I'm an editor. My sensei wants to, you know, research schlocken, and you seem like a prime candidate because you can barely get your words out. And then he meets up with someone who he thinks is a psychologist, but is actually a gag manga author and wants to use Shotaro as like a guinea pig so he can like find out what it's like to be a shut-in, lonely dude and use that as material for his gag manga, which makes the series feel weird, the fact that it's like a slightly comedic but ongoing, not it's not like a four-panel manga, it's an ongoing normal style manga. But it feels weird where it's like, hey, this is a series that's kind of gaggy around social anxiety, but also one of our internal characters is a gag manga artist. Oh god, this just got meta. It's kind of confusing. And that's like, I found myself flip-flopping on this series quite intensely because, as mentioned, it's very good at displaying Shotaro and how he can't function at times and is like a pit of anti-confidence. And that leads to you doing absurd things. Like, you want to know if someone's in so you don't bug them, and you don't want to like upset them. So you peek in through their window to see if they're in, which is really creepy if you are someone who is like, you know, fully able-minded and all that. It's just like this thing where people like blurt out stuff or get confused. Like, and there's an entire chapter about visiting the hairdressers, which is something I'm still very bad at, frankly, like laying it on the table. I hate going to the hairdressers and I suck at it. And whenever I go in there, I just want it to be over. And having a character do the exact same dumb shit I do when they go to a hairdresser's is kind of weird, where it's like, oh, but also at the same time, it kind of oscillates wildly between like Shotaro himself trying to self-actualize out of his condition and thinking that he's being helped to do that by the sensei, whose name I've forgotten, who basically looks really like a really weird, like, rich, pretty boy. But also at the same time, he's being made fun of by everyone around him. So it's this kind of whiplash back and forth where I'm not quite sure where, like, I don't think the manga itself knows where it's trying to land on how it wants to appraise Shotaro. Like, it's clearly, like, showing his anxieties earnestly, but then it's using it entirely for comedic effect and sort of insult almost. And it gets really bizarre. Like, they go to a cookery course and that's an entire really wild sequence. So it gets really kind of confusing, and I kind of oscillated between enjoying it and just feeling a bit weird and a bit disconnected from it and reading it from a distance, especially when it feels like it's doing those two tones in parallel on the same page in the same storylines, when it's like, oh, so there's like a comedy line and a serious business but also still comedy line here, and I'm not sure which one's winning or what's going on. They just kind of surface in between, so it makes it quite tiring to read, at least personally. So it's a weird duck. It's a really weird duck of a series. Well drawn, the character's bed hair is lovingly reproduced constantly, which you feel like at some point the author will be like, ugh, I need to give this guy a shave because, man, this hair is painful to draw. But yeah, it feels like it's got a lot of personality behind it as well. Like, it's one of these manga that was available on a web reader, but also then it had full chapters released in the print magazine. So it's got this kind of weird little back and forth where it has longer chapters, shorter chapters, etc. But, my angle on this very much is someone who is, you know, has previously had crippling and now still does, but lesser social anxiety. So I wonder what it would be like for someone who doesn't have that, or at least is able to cope with it a lot more. But so what, that's a really weird attempt at trying to bridge onto asking you what you thought about it, Andy. Sorry.
I hated it. I will
say. Fair.
I mean, basically, like, where you oscillated between kind of the things you liked about it and the things you didn't like, I just found myself, I mean, at some point I stopped taking notes in this series and just wrote in all caps, I hate everyone in this manga, which is actually not quite true because like Shotaro himself is fine. And like you say, I think kind of the one redeeming feature that this series has is that like Shotaro's character and, you know, kind of his social anxieties and his hangups are really well kind of realized and put forth. Like, you know, obviously they're kind of played for comic effect more often than not, and they're kind of, you know, maybe overplayed in places, or kind of or more to the point, I guess the kind of the reaction to them tends to be overplayed. But like as a whole, like I'm kind of with you on that I think as a character, like he's pretty well realized. I think the reason that I bounced off of it so hard is that it just felt like every single other character in that series is bullying him to a greater or lesser extent. It's like the guy kind of never catches a break. Like that's, I think ultimately, like the one thing that I forced myself to kind of keep reading it, but the one thing I kept telling myself is like, there's probably going to be some kind of point where you get some kind of redemption or some kind of progress or some kind of moment that kind of lets him feel better about himself or to kind of see a way forward in terms of some kind of self-improvement. But like, even when those moments kind of happen in the broadest sense, it still gets twisted back into kind of a joke at his expense. It's like the whole hairdresser thing you mentioned, like, you know, he does it, he goes to a hairdresser, he gets a haircut, but like the gag at the end of that is he gets a haircut that he doesn't want. And even like the hairdresser who is basically being nice to him as understanding as she can, like even that gets twisted around into like, oh yeah, well I had to like keep pinching myself the whole time not to laugh in his face. And it just like, it just felt really mean-spirited a lot of that time. Like the characters who seemed like they were kind of, you know, being nice to him in some shape or form actually had some kind of ulterior motive, or they were just like, you know, putting on a facade. And as soon as he was gone, like, you know, the knives were out, which almost felt like kind of a twisting around of the kind of the character's social anxiety of just like this thing of like, I bet when I'm gone, everyone's just going to laugh at me. And it's like, oh, this is just an actualization of that, where everybody who maybe isn't laughing to your face is laughing as soon as you've gone. And like, I don't know whether that's kind of says something about kind of the author's own take on this stuff, but it just all kind of added up to just feel really mean-spirited to me. And I really struggle to push myself through reading the entire volume off of the back of that, because I kind of found myself really actively disliking pretty much every character for the way they were behaving, like towards and around Shotaro.
Yeah, no, I think you're entirely correct. I mean, I'd completely forgotten about that thing with the hairdresser, where her chucklehead workmates are like, oh, how'd you put up with him? And it's like, and I thought, oh, the payoff of this is going to be the fact that when you don't like otherize people like that, it's not a big deal and they're just anxious. And she'll say like, hey, it's not a big deal. But then it's like, oh, I had to stop myself from laughing the whole time. It's like, oh man, Christ, like, way to undercut that character. Also, all the women look identical. It's weird.
there was a moment, I think, with that hairdresser, like, wait, isn't this like the manga editor's assistant? And it's like, oh no, actually this is a different. So like I thought maybe that was going to be a gag, that she's just like one of these characters. She's an underpaid like manga assistant, so of course she also has to work as a hairdresser, etc.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's also like so many characters are like ready to jump on him even from afar, which like even the manga creators' assistants are like, oh, this guy. And it's like, as I say, even they oscillate wildly between like everyone's trying to do both things at once, of make a gag out of him and also sympathize with him. So it comes off feeling really, not illegitimate. What's the word? No, just sort of fake. It feels like it's a facade there, which, you know, plays into anxiety, I suppose. But I can see why. Yeah, I must admit, I kind of cheered up towards the end because I quite enjoyed the like cooking section. But then it's like, oh, here's this weird subplot that may or may not be a romance subplot, but it's not, but it is, but it's not. And it's like, what's going on with this plot? What's going on? Have you not figured out what you're doing with this character, even though you're drawing the chapter right now? Like, what's going on?
Yeah. So
that entire section just left me really confused. One thing I will say, this is going to be a really weird compliment, but the translation notes at the back are really good. It's actually really good at explaining a bunch of kind of intense cultural notes, although at the same time it'd be nice if those had been like baked into the translation and the page presentation itself. But good translation notes about stuff, like it also some of those rejuxtapose the like cooking school section where it's like, oh, this is a cultural thing that happens in Japan with cookery shows, and this is what one of the characters mean by what they say this, and it's like, well, I wish I'd known that when I was reading the chapter itself, because that would have explained a lot more of it, rather than me sitting there going, what? What's going on?
Yeah. It's always a difficult balancing act, I guess, with that, because like as soon as you start putting notes, you know, in the margins or whatever, then you can be kind of less comprehensive around them. But I did notice that as well, because it's kind of at the point where, you know, you've absorbed so much of kind of Japanese culture and all of the usual things that get covered in manga, I tend to like flick through translation notes at best. So it's kind of nice to see where it's like, oh, actually, like there's some interesting like stuff that you maybe wouldn't have thought about or known otherwise. So like it's actually an educational set of translation notes rather than just the usual that I've kind of seen before.
But yeah, I'm sorry to give you something that made you slog, Andy. if it helps, it was a three sitting slog for me as well. I sat down to burn through it in one sitting and just had to go ugh and stop reading at one point. So
yeah, I had to bribe myself with breakfast at one point. So like I realized that I was just prevaricating around not reading the rest of it, and it's like, well, I need to have breakfast, so I'm gonna have breakfast and I'm gonna sit down and read this with my toast, and then hopefully it'll all be okay.
And then put your tablet in the toaster to make it go away.
Yeah, something like that. But I mean, it's interesting. Like, you know, I'm always kind of interested to see series that tackle this kind of thing. And you know, I think I know we both kind of have different opinions of like, no matter how you look at it, it's you guys' fault I'm not popular, which is kind of kind of similar in a sense. But like, I feel like even that has, I don't know, that has a kind of difference to its kind of self-awareness and the way it plays things out, that even compared to that, like this feels meaner and kind of more bullying somehow.
Well, I think in the case of It's You Guys' Fault is that the main character herself, like it's kind of a mirror back on the main character, like most like nearly all the time, just when shit happens to her, it's her own damn fault, and she's more spiteful in like actively chasing down something stupid and thus causing problems for herself. Whereas in this case, Shotaro is kind of just a neat, and also just is like, it's not like he did anything stupid or really, he just has social anxiety. Like that's kind of it. He's just really anxious, and likes like old literature, and that's kind of it. And there's nothing sinful to his being. He's just a dude. And in fact, the one thing I did like, and this is like the most minor frigging low hanging fruit thing, but I liked how his flat was clean and tidy. Because oftentimes yes. It's like, look at this filthy neat living in their own filth. And they're surrounded by cup noodle cartons. No, it's like this dude just has a lot of bookcases. That's kind of it. And he's like, oh, okay, that's nice. Like, it's a shame that that's a thing I noticed and was quite pleased by, you know, so. Yeah, there's that.
Yeah. And I mean, that is kind of the thing, like, throughout that volume is, like, yeah, there's kind of, you know, he's just a harmless, socially anxious guy. Like, he's not really offensive to anybody. Like, you know, he has bad fashion sense or zero fashion sense, but it's not like he's rocking up wearing the same t-shirt every day for a year. Like, you know,
well, he kind of ends up doing that anyway because his idiot like sensei gives him a bunch of t-shirts with different faces on, so yes. It's not his fault
indeed, but like, you know, I mean, you know, he's clean, like he clearly, you know, he's relatively well kept, like bedhead aside, and you know, it does at least not go into all the other kind of, you know, typical tropes of that kind of character. But I think all of that, the fact that like he's actually a decent, well-meaning guy, is just kind of what made the rest of it all the more frustrating for me. But
yeah, I can see that. I mean, to be fair, I picked this because I had seen like individual pages and panels on Twitter, and those were like really good pages, and we're like, oh, this is a good single thing. But when you're having to wade through the whole thing as a whole, it is tiring. So yeah, whoops. But yeah, that's Shut-In Shotaro Kominami Takes on the World. But yeah, it's, well, you've heard our judgment. So yeah, if anyone else has picked it up, be interested to hear what you think. If you've kind of suffered through it the same as Andy did. So moving on to your pick, Andy. So this is the slightly ripped from the headline still. Is it still in the cinemas? Anyway, you go ahead.
I'm not sure whether it is here in the UK, but I feel like I've still seen people seeing it quite recently in the US. So hot off of I can't really quite call it like box office success because it's all kind of trying to scrape into profit. But having
I hear it did better than was expected.
Indeed, everybody expected it to bomb completely, and it ended up doing okay. And more importantly, like people were critically kind of positive towards it, which I think nobody was necessarily expecting. Hot off the heels of his Hollywood film, I thought we should check out the first one of Battle Angel Alita, the source material for said film, which is something that, like, I think probably anybody who kind of reads any amount of manga has probably like heard the name thrown around. I've definitely had more than a few people say like, oh yeah, you should read that, and I've never gotten around to it, and so, you know, no time like the present, as it were, so that I can pretend to be like all but the hip kids with their movies and that. And so Battle Angel Alita, it's a sci-fi story. It sets up its world very simply, and it doesn't really require too much extrapolation. There is a big airship in the sky called Zalem, and then the world on the surface is called the Scrapyard, and like that pretty much tells you everything you need to know about the kind of social structure of this world, like in a panel or two. But the story itself, it starts out with a guy called Daisuke Ido, who is basically kind of a he basically kind of sifts through the scrap on the surface. He has an interest in kind of cyborgs and robots, etc., etc. And all of that kind of combines when he finds the remnants of this cyborg. Like, there's very little left of it, but like there's a kind of intact kind of head and clearly like a brain in there. And so he takes it home and kind of reactivates it effectively, and thus Alita, as he decides to name her, is kind of comes back to life. And so the early part of the story is effectively like Ido's idea, like having recovered this cyborg, is that he wants to make her like perfect. Like he wants to create this perfect being, kind of the angel, if you like, of the localized title. But as time goes on, and as kind of like Alita kind of starts to get a grip of kind of who she is and who she wants to be, like it becomes very clear that's not what she wants. And she kind of, you know, pushes back on that in the end. A whole bunch of other stuff happens, and she kind of ends up becoming a hunter warrior, basically kind of a mercenary for hire, as in fact Ido is as well, which is kind of a slightly sort of twisty and turny early plot line. And so kind of Alita basically ends up with a rather impressive kind of berserker body, as it's called. It's basically like she has some pretty cool kind of like cyborg armor, cybernetic suit thing, for want of a better turn of phrase. And this first volume basically kind of involves some big bad that comes along and kind of, you know, skirmishes with Alita, and then decides that he wants revenge on her, or does he? ? And, you know, it basically just all rolls into kind of a pretty big action set piece of Alita and said big bad monster just kind of duking it out for their lives, basically. And I quite enjoyed this series. Like the weird thing about reading this is it kind of reminded me of reading a Western comic more than it did a manga. Like I enjoyed this in the same kind of way I still enjoy reading like the original run of UK Transformers comics. Like, they have some smart ideas occasionally, but, you know, they're very much about like, oh, you know, look at the cool action stuff and, you know, some cool looking characters and so on and so forth. And that was kind of refreshing to me, I think. You know, it's very simple and very surface level. There's not really any kind of depth to this first volume, certainly. But I kind of liked it in that kind of like throwaway popcorn sort of, you know, Western style of storytelling. And that was just kind of what sustained me through it. Like it has plenty of kind of gruesome violence, etc., etc. But it has a real good like art style. It is really stylish in terms of its action in particular and how it depicts that. Like occasionally it goes a little bit all over the place, but for the most part it looks really cool, and it has a good kind of sense of kind of peril and power and weight to things once it kind of actually gets into the proper action segment of it. And so yeah, I just kind of liked it in that sort of way. Like I'm not kind of super invested in like, oh man, I really want to read more of this. I it's more a kind of like I almost wish I'd kind of grabbed a bunch of it in bulk in like a Humble bundle or something, because I could see myself reading this as some kind of throwaway entertainment if I didn't want anything kind of too heavy-handed to read of a morning.
Yeah, because it was recently in a Humble bundle where you could get basically all of it, all of Alita from its various, like, from the original series, Last Order, the sequel series, and then the spin-offs, which are even wilder. I have a weird thing. I have a weird relationship with this manga because I read it years and years and years ago when I was like a baby manga neophyte and did not like it at all and was kind of dreading coming back to it because I just... It's really exhausting. This manga exhausts me in a weird way because I still don't like it, but I can appreciate it. You know, like, I don't want to read any more of it. I don't like reading it. But I can fully appreciate everything that makes it up, which is exhausting because I always had people recommend this to me and I'm like, yeah, I tried it. I don't like it. And people are like, what? And I'm like, look, I get it. I like the really obvious, like, class war, sort of mention. I like the art and the designs and all the robots and all the, like, clear, like, technical rot and level stratification of, you know, cyborgs and, you know, the very clear fact that, like, the way that the series plays a lot with, you know, what is the seat of existence and ego, what is a body, what matters, what does it matter, what is flesh and what is bone. Like, Ido himself, like, the doctor, is a robot doctor. He helps do patch-up work on robots, but he himself is 100% human, apart from wearing glasses. And so he is, you know, and he jealously guards his humanity and his flesh body, whereas Alita is 100% cyborg, apart from the brain, which is, like, the important part and is the seat of being in the concept of this series, where, you know, the main antagonist is basically a giant, like, sword worm on a stick where the head still resides. So it's like, and one thing I know is the art is always very dynamic. There's no wasted in between panels. Like, there's no in between panels at all. It's always like prime action, prime movement. And the one thing I do like is when you're in a combat sequence or a fight, you know, if things are moving fast, you will see after images of previous actions in future panels, so you know you're in the same physical space and the same combat is occurring, which looks really cool. And it gives it a real sense of place and location. And like you say, sometimes you'll be, like, turned around because it's trying to get fancy with its, like formatting and structure and camera work, but it can lose you slightly. But that's one thing that's really good about Alita. Like, the combat is really crunchy. And another thing about that in the art in particular, the art is nice, but I can't stand Alita's design. And I know that, like, it's got the ultimate duck lips before they were ever called duck lips on Alita, and her giant eyes. And I cannot stand it. I can't. I hate Alita. I hate the main character. Like, she sucks.
Yeah, and
I just don't like her design.
And weirdly, it kind of feels out of place compared to the rest of that series as well. I mean,
the whole idea about it is that she's, like, hyper fetishized. She's like the perfect manga daughter / waifu. That even, you know, Ido would be way cooler if it wasn't for his weird, like, wanting to raise her as a daughter / marry her as a bride thing, which is hella creepy. And thankfully, like, at least the series is fast and sensible enough to ditch that into the river, literally, very quickly. And then Ido basically, like, you know, he is rehabilitated through his own realization that he can't shove people in a box. Sorry, Andy, you were saying something, I cut you off.
I mean, it's really just, I'm kind of with you about Alita's character just not looking right compared to that series. And, like, yeah, like you say, I can see why she's designed the way that she is, but it doesn't feel in keeping with the rest of that series. And weirdly, it's the main reason I didn't go to watch the movie, because they make that even worse, and then they just add, like, a whole dose of uncanny valley into it, into the midst of it. So, like, I'm curious to see that film, is just like, I was just so put off by kind of the design of that character in the live action version as well.
Yeah, a number of people I trust the opinion of I trust their opinion strongly. Like, they've said, no, when you're in the movie, you don't see it, you see it for like 4 minutes and then it vanishes from your eyesight. It always looks huge and crazy in stills, but I still don't like it. So and this is what drives me nuts about this series, is it's got tons and tons of fascinating stuff, but I just don't like the main character, and I I feel like it's moving too fast and leaving behind tons of stuff I wanted to ruminate on. Like, even the, like, berserker, crazy, brain-eating antagonist, which, you know, gross, but even the crazy antagonist, like, quotes Nietzsche at one point, and it's like, okay, this series clearly has ideas about what bodies are and what cyborgification means and where the seat of humanity exists. But it just keeps burning straight through all of it. And also, like, Alita's power curve is so intense. Like, it goes from, like, Lass is a torso, Lass has pretty arms, Lass has a crazy war body, Lass has amazing cyborg, like, martial arts. And it's like, whoa, hang on. You're using all this cool stuff, but as soon as you've introduced it, you're literally just chucking it into the pile, saying, ah, it's not good enough anymore. And it's like, whoa, like, in one volume, you've had so many power-ups that, you know, even Bleach can't get close to you. And that's what kind of drives me nuts about it, is it never feels like it's quite good enough or can explore the space of what it's made for itself. And, like, all the designs of the city look cool, and you know about, like, a bar and a doctor's surgery. And it's just, it feels like there's tons there, but it keeps focusing on the stuff I don't care about, which sadly is the main character, which again is why it drives me nuts.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of like envisage it almost like from, and I totally agree with you on that because it doesn't. It's weird because I don't know why it introduces that stuff and does nothing with it, because my default is like, it doesn't seem to care about that stuff, but then why put it there in the first place? But the kind of the end result is it kind of feels a little bit like Michael Bay's Ghost in the Shell. You know, it's kind of like it feels like somebody's read Ghost in the Shell and then said, yeah, but what if we just replaced all of the, like, the thoughtful stuff with just, like, cool action scenes? And that's kind of what you end up with.
Yeah, and it gestures towards tons of stuff. Like, the main antagonist, like, you know, they have a philosophy and a thing they're going for, but it will get subverted to the, like, giant gross tongue he has that wants to eat brains. So, like I said, it has tons of ideas there, but it just blows past all of them, which, again, is what wears me out. And like I say, I just hate the main character. Like, I feel like I want every story that could be possibly told in this world but the one that I'm being told. which, again, it's just why and the reason why I get so het up, and you can hear it in my voice now, is that I want to like this, like, but again, like, bleh.
Yeah. I mean, it's the interesting thing, kind of, you know, obviously having only read this first volume, is like, I kind of find myself wondering, like, oh, maybe it digs more into its kind of, you know, social strata and some of these other concepts, like, in later volumes. And I guess, like, part of my kind of, like, I just enjoyed this for what it was kind of like almost from the assumption of, like, well, they've set all this stuff up. I guess some of that stuff will probably kind of, like, get dropped in as future volumes go on, but I'm guessing, I don't know how much you've read of it in the past, but I'm guessing that's probably not the case.
I couldn't say either way, honestly. I always bomb out after this first volume. I mean, frankly, I have all of it from the Humble Bundle. I could read it. The only problem is that the CBZs provided by Kodansha as part of the Humble Bundle make my tablet eat dirt. Like, it crashes constantly. So I eventually ended up having to download the CBZ, unzip it, and read it in Windows File Viewer, you know, using the photo viewer, which is not a great experience, frankly, because either the file size is too big, I can't tell what, it just ruins my reader app, can't handle it. So
yeah, I mean,
so that's one thing to say, is that unfortunately the curse of the Humble Bundle, like, PDF slap, well, PDF would be fine, but the curse of the Humble Bundle, like, inelegant file format strikes again.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you know, that's kind of been the thing that has kept me away from other Humble Bundles, because I had issues with the Knights of Cydonia and the Nihei one that I did kind of jump in on, and it's kind of like once bitten, twice shy on that. But
I feel like they need a second pass on that stuff, because it's really annoying where, like, you get all this stuff for a cut-down rate, but to make these Humble Bundle volumes play nice, you have to roll a dice. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, you basically need to download Calibre and refix the volume yourself, which is not, which is a lot of actual work, frankly. From being someone who's done it, it takes a long time, and it sucks.
Yeah, quite. So, and I mean, I guess one thing I will mention on the slightly more technical angle, like, I realize it's because of kind of the age of this release, but it felt super weird not having sound effect translations like on the page and having them all in the back.
Oh yeah, they're all crammed at the back. Yeah,
because I was like sat there, it's like this is a really suboptimal way of like, you know, trying to figure out what the sound effects were. Like, I mean, there was certainly one or two points where I was like, I just wish I knew what that sound actually was, because it sounded like it was vaguely kind of important to what was happening. But it's like, I'm not going to just like, especially with digital, I mean, it's one of the kind of real disadvantages of digital is, you know, you can't just kind of flip back and forth quite as easily. It's a little bit more of a pain in the backside. So that just felt weird, weirdly arcane. It's like, oh yeah, this is the way these things used to happen, huh?
Yeah, you can join me in rereading Excel Saga and going, why aren't any of these translate? Oh, they're all at the back. Wild. especially in the case of that series, because trying to redraw that art would probably make someone cry. So, woof. So yeah, Battle Angel Alita. That's very complex feelings here on ScreenTone.club. But yeah, I mean, I still don't regret picking up the Humble Bundle, because, you know, if I want to, I can have a read of it. Maybe I will at some point. I don't know. Because if this is like first volume jitters while it kind of finds its feet, you know, maybe, who knows? Everyone always talks about Motorball, which sounds cool, but I have no idea what it is. But everyone always talks about this future arc called Motorball. And it's like, well, that sounds good in the 80s, doesn't it?
Yeah, indeed. But yeah, I mean, I'd like to think it makes good on some of the things that it sets up in this first volume and does nothing with.
One sign is that it keeps getting like sequel or spin-off series, so it must be something that's bringing people to it that maybe I'm just not seeing. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed it as a thing, but like I said, like I just felt so much like, oh, this is just like reading a Western comic, and that was kind of weirdly refreshing to me.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes you need to change up your tastes. Cool. So, that's Battle Angel Alita Volume 1, and now we're going to be talking about what we're going to be looking at for next time. So, I have picked out a series which I've been meaning to read for a while and finally picked up in the recent Bookwalker, like, pseudo-sale thing, which is Volume 1 of Giant Spider and Me, A Post-Apocalyptic Tale. So yeah, I've heard good things about this, and the cover's quite nice. It's got a nice looking spider, so we'll see if it delivers on the spider.
Words I never thought I'd see on this podcast, a nice looking spider.
Hey, you know, they're fine. You know, I don't, they sort of creep me out, but they're fine. So, okay, how about you, Andy?
So my choice, a little while back on the podcast, we talked about Anatsume Ono work in terms of Acca 13, and I figured we'd check out something else of theirs, and that is Danza, which is actually a collection of stories all about being a foreigner, which I thought is interesting and topical in our current times, so I figured we'd check that one out.
Yeah, I know Anatsume Ono is starting another series up recently, which is, I believe, set in the Acca universe. And it's set in the, you know, that capital city of the Acca 13 territories. Yeah. I forget the name of it, but that's the title of the manga, is that capital city. And it's about basically a bunch of dudes who make a bar. So Natsume Ono go to Natsume Ono, I guess.
Yeah, why not? I wonder how many times they can mention Data in it.
Oh, don't. Anyway, quick shout out. I meant to put this at the start, but here it is at the end, is that we discussed long and hard about the Shonen Jump app and how it was slightly clunky to use. And it's still clunky to use, but it now has the very notable inclusion of a like chapter last read section on the front page. So you can actually keep track of where you got up to on series and then jump back in again, which, thank you very much. it's made using the app a lot better. But I just wanted to give them a shout out here.
It's good to see them doing that at least, and it sounds like there are plenty of other improvements on the way, which also reminds me I'm like a chapter or two behind on Promised Neverland, so I should.
Man, did you see that? I sent you a DM with an important screenshot about that, so yeah, get on it.
Yes,
man, alive. God, that I feel like we're at that turn again where we've just had like a change of storyline, and I was on my fence again going, oh, I don't know if it's going to keep going. And now it's like, oh no, okay, here we go. I'm back on the ride again. So, well, the cycle continues, I guess.
Yes, indeed.
Yep. Cool. So, thank you very much for listening. Now getting into the close down of the episode. We are Screen Tone Club. You can find the rest of the episodes on screentone.club. Podcast can be found on all good podcatchers. If you so fancy, we would like to ask if you could leave a review. That stuff really, really helps with availability and discoverability. If you so fancy, as mentioned at the top, you can chuck some money towards us in our Patreon. As a complete side note, and that something no one will care about, is that Patreon recently changed up how their back end looks. And while it is now a lot tidier, I can't find anything. So, help. So, you can find our Twitter feed at Screentone Club, where you can interact with us about manga. Hooray! And you can also email us, if you so fancy, at show@screentone.club. I just maintain that for personal reference, frankly. My name is Elliot Page. You can find me at Elliot Page on Twitter, where I am valiantly trying not to talk about politics and then trying to post more cat pictures instead. How about you, Andy?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, where I just talk about politics, because why the heck not? And you can find me at Hannah's1979.
Also Index Season 3, I think.
Yeah.
Have you given up on that? I can't tell.
I mean, I don't even know what's going on in Index anymore, so I try to keep a low profile. They're in Russia right now, so topical.
Oh, the Index experience.
Yes, indeed.
Man, yeah, nonsense. So, thank you very much for listening. We will be back in 2 weeks with an episode. So, thank you very much for listening, and good night.
Bye, everyone.